This is Making Docs. I'm Paul, an aspiring documentary film producer.
And I'm Caroline, a freelance documentary director.
Follow us on this journey where we speak to industry professionals to get practical advice. This episode is about selling the documentary film.
We visit two-time Oscar-nominated documentary film production company, Spring Films. This is the first part of two conversations we have with their global head of development, Fix Jackman, about commissioning documentary films.
We're back at the wonderful Spring Films, mm-hmm. and today we are with the one and only Figs Jackman.
Afternoon. How are you doing? Hello, Paul. Hello, Caroline.
Hi. Yeah. I love the beautiful, colorful seats. I can only say that every time I'm here, I'm just amazed by these beautiful seats. So, I don't know. So attractive.
Trust me, you know, like, so are we. We're delighted. They're comfy as well.
Yeah.
Stay back.
Figs, I'd like to start with understanding Figs a little bit. So you're currently head of global development for Spring Films, which is a great title.
That's right. Yep. The head of production, Pat Footer jokes that is head of intergalactic.
How do you end up being head of global development for Spring Films?
Look, I've always loved film content and the arts world anyway. So my background is not a traditional kind of get into the film industry via mummy and daddy and a trust fund. And, you know, I was the first person to go to university. I did study film and drama. I was in bands. I ran club nights. I traveled a lot. I was done bits of acting. And I think all of that really helps. There was huge crossovers between the artistic world. And when it comes to making content, you constantly draw on those experiences in life. And I think that really helps when it comes to developing ideas and thinking about ideas. And my journey was kind of, I think, similar to a lot of people now. You need different skill sets to kind of get on. And yes, it's some of it's meeting people and talking to people and finding that there's sort of kind of a shared experience or a shared enjoyment in one particular subject. A couple of friends helped, you know, helped in the leg up. I'll always be grateful to a woman called Ita Fitzgerald, who was working at a production company. I used to badger her a lot and sort of say, oh, could you help? And she sort of got some of my ideas across the sort of desk over there.
So did you come in as a researcher? Or
I was running. I worked in post houses. I think what's so important for me and whoever I speak to, and it's more important than it ever was. I know that when I was first flinging my CV around sort of the production industry and walking around, I used to walk around Soho knocking on doors and handing out my CVs, which can be annoying for people, but actually can actually be quite a good way still of doing it.
Did that work?
It did work. But people couldn't really get their heads around who I was or what I was doing because I was doing all these different things, and I did some presenting as well. And clearly, none to a massive, you know, I'm not living by the swimming pool in sort of Vegas off the royalties of the music. But they were all great experiences, but people couldn't put that together then. I think that's changed a lot because of multitasking, knowing how to edit, knowing how to shoot, and being able to do it all at home has obviously really professionally, you know, when I was doing this, it was kind of still a bit clunky and you couldn't really get the results. But now you can really do something really professional. So I think having those skill sets and having that life experience has really, really helped me. I was working on building sites in Australia for a while, and I'm clearly not the biggest bloke that's ever stepped onto a building site. but I think that there, you know, just sitting down with some of the Maori workers that have come over from New Zealand, talking about their lives and the tattoos and like their experience. And I could see that I was getting stuck in. So they actually kind of listened to what I was up to. And those things, you don't know where that's going to take you in terms of ideas and developing ideas or even contacts. And I think that's really, really helps, as I say, fast forward a few years to where I am today. I had another big break, and my couple of moments, you need those moments. And clearly, for every overnight success, and I'm not saying I'm a success, but I mean every bit where you go, oh, where are you today? There are moments. And my moment for me was I was lucky enough to work with David Frost, the broadcasting legend. That came about just through a bit of knowing people, but there was an opportunity. And he was fantastic to work with. It was a really small team. And I ended up doing everything because it was a low budget BBC thing. And that led to others with him. But I learned a lot from someone that had been working in that industry for 50 years and a lovely bloke as well. And I think that having that experience and then them access to his contacts was enormously helpful and actually did help me get to Spring eventually. But I know that companies like Spring, that they're few and far between. You know, being able to do those things that you love doing and passionately believe in is obviously, has always been my dream, and to be able to do that is wonderful, but it's smoke and mirrors. And for every, you know, over this hour, every bit that we could kind of talk about, there are a lot of tumbleweed moments and a lot of moments where you are going, oh my God, where is the next gig going to come from? Where is the next job going to come from? Will I get another job in the industry? And I think that anybody that's kind of at that point where I was, I really understand it. I really know what it's like. People constantly ask you for work for nothing. It's all these things that are really, really difficult. Keep hanging in there as much as you can, but don't worry if it isn't tomorrow or 6 months or a year, because these things come round and there's no hard and fast rule where you should be at any one stage of your career, full stop. And I think that's really, really more important than ever, because the industry is evolving. So it needs different skill sets, and those skill sets are going to pop up, and then you're going to be massively in demand. And then it's up to you where your career or where it takes you.
So now that you are head of global development, what does that really entail, Figs?
Well, Spring Films is a small company. It's very outward looking. We're particularly looking at international content creation. So that means, in a nutshell, that we're either coming up with ideas internally and then working out how to pitch them and bring them to market to raise the money, through to co-productions where someone might come with an idea that's either fully formed, at least in a teaser form, which I'll talk a bit more, a bit later, or somewhere down the line that just need kind of sort of helping across the line. It's that side of development, but also, as I say, it's a small company, so I will produce or exec produce through to the end of a project. There's no hard and fast rule how that works. It's more how close you are to a project, or whether or not it's something that you can kind of help navigate with somebody, or there are times where you just step back and somebody else comes in that's within the company and we'll take that through. It's kind of complicated, but it also depends on the project. Some of the projects here will go on for years. Not an ideal business model, I always underline, but you could kind of need to keep across them while they develop. Where does development begin and where does it end is a really difficult question now.
So you're responsible as well for getting the money for the projects?
Yes.
And also selling the projects into the distributors to help get those films out there?
Yeah.
So just to highlight for the listeners some of the commissions that you have managed to get not that long ago, Werner Herzog's Into the Inferno, where you worked with Netflix, is that right?
Right.
Meeting Gorbachev, where you worked with A&E, Arte, MDR, and Night Will Fall, where you worked with HBO and Channel 4.
Yes.
So can you explain briefly the practical process of actually picking up the project and then taking that to fruition where you get that distributed?
Sure. Look, I think it's absolutely crucial that any creative has an understanding of this, and that's that kind of producer's role. Whether or not you see yourself purely as a director, fine, but you have to have an understanding of this, the practical realities, because ultimately it is about getting your film onto a screen or a tablet or wherever that's going to end up. So first of all, I think any question is who is your audience? That's an absolute key one. Mm-hmm. Where is the money going to come from is ultimately who that audience is, whether or not it's a domestic commission, such as the channel over here, the BBCs, Channel 4s, ITVs, or it's the big streaming networks and platforms, which is obviously the money's coming out of the States, and that's mainly a US lean. So we're looking for a US leaning content for them predominantly. And I know we could unpack that further. Obviously, Netflix is expanding rapidly with more regional commissioners. But still, for the majority of the big streaming platforms, you do need that kind of US lean. So knowing your audience, knowing where it's gonna go is crucial. I think the next question, as say in this rapidly evolving market, is...
So before we move on from that, so knowing your audience and where it's going to go, so you mean I've got this amazing access, I want to make this film about this character in the UK, and then I have to really decide who's going to watch that or narrow that down, what type of person, and then I have to figure out, okay, what broadcaster might be interested in showing this?
Well, I think it's a bit more simple than that. It's like, if we were going to watch something tonight and it's our film, let's say the three of us are going to make a film together and we're going to sit down tonight and we're going to go, right, let's watch that film.
Yeah.
Where can we envisage that we could switch on and watch that? You know, I always caveat this. I'll ask that question and invariably people come back with Netflix. I go, okay, fine. Who else but Netflix, yeah, where we see your film? And it literally can be any platform, anywhere, but anywhere that is going to give you money, basically. Where is the finance going to come from when it's a commission? So you don't have to know the sort of demographics and, you know, like really break it down. It's straightforward. Are we shutting our eyes and seeing that we're going to watch that ITV, you know, 9 o'clock tonight? Or is that going to be, say, a Netflix or a Disney Plus? Now, they're very, very different looks. There's a different feel about them. There's different subject matters. So you don't have to have any specialist knowledge about that, because we all watch stuff. And it's where are you watching that stuff and where does our stuff that we're making fit into those platforms.
Okay, so for example, I'm making a film about a character who rides a motorbike and they've got a goal of being a world championship racer and you've got some amazing fast footage of the motorbike.
Is this a pitch?
So, no. No.
Good. I'm liking it.
You're liking it. Okay, I'll keep going. No, but is it a case of then, okay, well, this is suited for the sports channel on Sky Sports and I need to go on online, find someone connected to Sky who is connected to the sports section? Is it as simple as that?
It can be. Look, I think that certainly when it comes to specifics like sports, you do find that if that's within an approach, an email or a verbal pitch, then commissioners will move your project towards those genre heads. Mm-hmm. And that can happen a lot with music, can happen a lot with arts. So there is elements of that. But the other bit is if within your pitch you're saying, but this isn't a motorcycle doc. This is a story of hope or humanity or travel or ambition or and then
Universal.
We get a little bit more that this is maybe a human story that moves it more into a doc space. A true as in sort of a human character story that has an incredible journey and a credible story behind that, then that again will move it to a different commissioner or even a different platform. There's no hard and fast rule on this. Often when you're pitching things, you know, we're working on something this afternoon that we are literally working two or three versions of that treatment or that proposal with that sizzle, that teaser, to work for two or three different markets. Mm-hmm. So there is a slight twist of the dial that goes on. And again, understanding that if you shut your eyes, can you see that on Netflix or can we see that on BBC Four? As I say, we all watch stuff. You know, we all know what these channels and these platforms represent or the kind of tone or style they have, because that's very consciously created. So there are tweaks to that. Talking to filmmakers, it's like, let's be flexible about that. Let's not be wedded to a form like a feature doc. Mm-hmm. Spring Films has gained a really strong reputation for creating high-end blue-chip feature documentaries. But that's not to say that we're not looking and we're, you know, talking and sort of moving forms and playing with forms such as with platforms such as Quibi. Again, I've had those conversations where we're working on a feature doc. We've looked at the Quibi model. We've started a conversation because we've started to work at how can we work this as chapters, small chapters. And I think it's really that conversation with the filmmaker. Yes, it's important to have conviction in your beliefs and your vision, but the market's changing. And actually, there's a lot of exciting potential and possibilities with these changes. So can your story, can your narrative work in this? And what's best for the narrative? There's no hard and fast rule with that. And I think it's exciting to explore it. But if it's not going to work, then move on.
So as a filmmaker, you have to stay flexible in that
100%.
Sense. And in terms of finding a story, like, I think there are two routes. Like, either you're going out trying to find stories that you're interested in, that you want to commission. And on the other hand, I think a lot of people might approach you, as sure. Paul did. I have this great idea, Fix. What do you think? How do you decide what's a good story?
Well, I can be quite brutal, to be honest. And that's more of the realities of the industry. This is the hardest bit, and the hardest bit of all. So there's some wonderful stories, But it does come back to that question of where will they be shown, i.e. who can we raise the money from? And there was wonderful stories that the market, and unless there's a trust fund that someone's going to chuck £100,000 or dollars your way, it's very difficult to get them made. So the bar is extremely high. Mm-hmm. And so what you need, and it's what I'm looking for, and again, without a hard, fast rules, certainly not. There has to be flexibility from our side. But it is, what is the unique access? What is the point that I know that nobody else is pitching this in the marketplace? What is the great narrative within that access? What is that story we're going to really engage with and follow over that, however long the series, the episode, the one part's going to be? And those two elements are absolutely fundamental to trying to get things away in my job. We're not the hard and fast rule. We're talking more the networks. This is more, I call them, was the traditional way, even though traditional now means Apple and Disney Plus and Quibi and those, all those new people that are all coming on. Since this week it's been Apple. So that is your, I'm getting a money as a commission. You've also got to bear in mind, as a filmmaker, if you're getting commissioned, they have the final say. They have the final editorial. And as much as we protect that and we try and, you know, obviously from the filmmaker's point of view, is they are paying for this. Mm-hmm. And again, that's another harsh reality, is it, they are buying it. And so they will have that editorial say. I don't see it as combative. I see it as a positive, because ultimately everyone should, and I think really do, want the same thing. And that's amazing content on our screens. But it does mean, again, some flexibility and an understanding that unless you're an absolute true A-list director, then that's a long way down the line.
I think that there is quite another challenge for filmmakers like me. So I'm Peruvian, living in London. I know that there are other filmmakers living maybe in the US or some other places in Europe. We have, our stories are at the other end of the world. And I feel every time I approach people, people are interested, like it's exotic, nice landscapes. But then when it comes to getting commission or selling the story in a way, it's, oh, yeah, where do we sell it? Yeah. What
no,
do you say?
I can certainly understand that. I think there was sort of a couple of things you're looking for on stories, such as the sort of examples you're giving, is there's the unique access, but there's also the universal themes. What is it that someone not from the culture or the language can actually relate to on a human level? Whether or not it's the sort of fundamentals, love, hate, you know, relationships, families, school, you know, those sorts of things. But it still has to be extraordinary. What is this extraordinary story that you're going to take me on? I think, to be honest, that's one of the things that I think a lot of the streamers have been fantastic for, and platforms in general, is that we've been liberated. I don't want to get too negative, because stop me on if I do, but the UK broadcasters, which, to be honest, I'm looking way outside, but it is very parochial and sort of local and inward gazing, and there's a lot of broader political reasons for that. But actually, I think that the streamers, we are now completely comfortable with subtitles. Yeah. You know, I think 70% of content even we're reading now on a daily basis has subtitles, whether they need it or not. Mm-hmm. We're used to that. I really do think that looking forward, we're going to be enjoying a lot more content that isn't just from the culture that we're first most acquainted with. But it's still very difficult. And I think realistically, say it's those key touchstones, incredible narrative, incredible stories. And the other one, which really doesn't help, but I get the email every single day from financiers and distribution companies as well, is that it's changing. They are coming in with money, the distributors, but I still got the email that says, this is fantastic, Figs, I love this story, but come back when it's finished.
Oh.
And you're like, well, why am I writing to you? It's like, here's the clue. You might have some money. Yeah. And that's a reality that Spring Films faces. So I understand that anybody outside of a production company or an established production company will get that 20-fold. I do think the industry as a broader base is really is trying to help. Yeah. There's a whole load of economic realities that we can't shy away from. Certainly in the UK, we don't have the regional funding support or the government support. It's very little. And I know people might be shouting at the radio or their phones or whatever that, yes, there are certain funds around, but they're not as readily available or as they're not as large as maybe some other places like Germany. We don't have that network or that system that will allow the sort of films, and the, certainly in Scandinavia, that other producers are able to work. Mm-hmm. And that means that we're, I think, in the UK really quite lean, and we do have to kind of work out other ways of getting things done. But it also means that things don't get made. There is one feature documentary strand on British TV, and that's on Storyville on BBC Four. There's a reality behind that. You are going to get around £20,000 to £30,000 from Storyville to make your film. Where's the rest of the money going to come from? They're not just a filmmaker's reality. They're a filmmaker's reality within Spring Films and any production company. So I'm talked about traditional, you know, ways of raising money. I think that anybody that's making content now that's doing things themselves and short form, it's incredibly exciting. It's finding where that money is, and brands, I think, are moving more and more within this space. And I think that people need to be open-minded, clearly, with a caveat that if they're unethical and all those sorts of things, of course, that's important. Well, absolutely important. But it's being flexible in terms of how we make stuff again around the narrative and what we're actually going to achieve. And maybe we can do that with another partner that isn't the commissioning route.
So have you got an example of, so you've got a good idea for a film, you take that to the networks, the broadcasters. How many of them do you have to get them committed to create that project? So do they all put in a small chunk of money each? Is that how it works? Is it very unlikely that they're just going to go, here's all the money that you want?
There's no hard, fast rule. Okay. What is apps, again, I don't want to be like bang, bang the table. I'm banging the table metaphorically, is getting a fantastic tease or sizzle together. That is the first step before anything else. And that can be, I always say, no longer than 2 minutes, ideally a minute and a half. People won't watch anymore. Don't try to tell all the story of your film in that 2 minutes. The word tease is that. Leave them wanting more. It's that moment. What is it that makes your project stand out? And if you have a great character, that character has to be really incredible and pop on screen. But that, if you've got that package, and then the rest of the material, certainly at that, at an early stage, yes, you need to kind of work out what that narrative is, but really it's about the paragraph and the tease. That is the springboard to then start this process that can take a hell of a long time. Mm-hmm. We're talking more, lots of months, even into years. And I know people are like, no, I can't do it. But if you've got those materials in that real great shape, and yes, you can use material that isn't licensed to you, it's not being broadcast. Archive houses such as Getty and AP are very accommodating. They can give you unwatermarked content, obviously with their permission. Mm-hmm. But you can use that to really make your vision clear. And if you have that, then you start that journey. And yes, the one-stop shop with a US Netflix original, whoever, is the dream scenario with everyone. Mm-hmm. It's a small industry. You know, we're all approaching the same people. Mm-hmm. So you have to hit it out the park. You have to stand out above the crowd and make that person go, whoa, I want this, and I want nobody else to have it. That's the dream scenario. That's the one where, we're still talking weeks, but the phone will be picked up and it's like, okay, let's move towards something. Other ways, as I said, is being flexible, whether or not it's a co-production partner. We work a lot with Canadian production companies, one called Saloon, who is owned by Blue Ant, and they've been wonderful as both a sort of production co-production partner, but also they have access to regional money. Mm-hmm. And you put together, and they also distribute, and they have channels. So they put together a package. And I don't want to go too far into the detail because people will drop off, but you start to put those sort of jigsaw pieces together. Mm-hmm. Where basically, if you have a realistic budget of how we can complete it, back to the line about this is great figs, can we come back at fine cut? Having a realistic budget without cutting your arm off and realizing that there are costs for archive and working out what your music's going to be and self-composed or how are we going to do music, and what are we going to end up delivering to the networks is important, and insurance and those really, again, sort of boring things, having a realistic budget and then trying to put those pieces together with co-production partners is this, isn't plan B, it runs alongside. Things are changing. I was at a conference. I travel a lot, which is a thing I love doing, and I'm very privileged, and it's a huge privilege for me because, I say, I don't have a traditional background, so going to Cannes and MIPCOM and LA and all those sorts of things. But at MIPCOM this year, Nat Geo, I met some execs from Nat Geo, and the guys there are wearing their Disney badges because Nat Geo is part of the Disney family now. And you kind of, that's a real, that time last year, they had their own stand, but now they're very much in that. So they're trying to find their way of how that enormous company is fitting into the ecosystem of Disney. Mm-hmm. And so things are changing. So it's as much about being standout, people engage. They are looking at international and global audiences 100%. Yes, it often needs a US lean, but at the same time, if you have that material that you really have worked on that makes people sit up, they will engage. And it really is about clicking them to watch. And conversely, if anyone sends me a 5-minute tease, I will shout at them. Mm-hmm. Because you won't get watched. And I know your story might be incredible, and I know that, but just cut it right back, because you don't want someone at one of these places to click on and then go, I haven't got time for this, and click off before they've watched it. And that will happen.
If you don't have the content to create that teaser, how can you get around that?
Well, as I said, you can use, you know, some of the archive houses. You could certainly borrow off YouTube and, well, you know, public domain.
Because it's, material. I suppose, shown internally, then you can use whatever material that you
absolutely
want in reason.
Absolutely. No, it's as long as you're not utterly sort of lying that you've got, you know, access to people you don't have access to. And, you know, it's, you'll be found out pretty quick. But the idea of sort of a tonal, what you'd like to create, you can certainly use off, say, YouTube and others.
Have you got an example of that? So, like with Gorbachev, did you have to?
Yeah, there's a couple, actually. Gorbachev is a good example. We clearly didn't have an interview with Mikhail Gorbachev in the can at that stage when we're trying to raise the money. Yeah, we did borrow from other interviews. We knew that we were trying to tell the story of the man, the human story behind these huge changes at the end of the last century. So how do we tell that? We really dug deep to find those moments of any interviews where he was more Mikhail Gorbachev, the man, than the politician.
On YouTube or just archive?
Archive, YouTube. Yeah. It takes a bit of digging, but there were a couple of bits, old interviews, admittedly. What we wanted to do was we wanted to set up the questions. What questions are we going to ask within this film? Mm-hmm. There is a subtle difference between a tease and a trailer. The tease, you're trying to leave people wanting more and setting it up so people go, yes, I want to know more. I want to invest in this, mm-hmm. literally on a money scale, but also on a dialogue to find out how we're going to tell this story. Mm-hmm. A trailer is more, obviously, it's finished and this is the thing. This is it, yeah. You know. Yes, and again, you obviously have those moments where you're trying to entice an audience to go and see it. But the Gorbachev one, we were setting up the questions. Traitor, villain, hero, who is Mikhail Gorbachev? Mm-hmm.
So just words on screen.
Correct. Yeah. Words, music. Again, we're using recognised soundtrack music, yeah. or wherever. And it wasn't an easy one to put together. I think we achieved it because we were able to kind of show that this is tonally what we'd like to do, mm-hmm. and also with regards to that specifically, and that's a really good example about getting things away, mm-hmm. if Mikhail Gorbachev had declined to take part, we wouldn't have a film. Yeah. That's what I mean by the bar is being high. We could not tell the story of Mikhail Gorbachev or the fall of the Soviet disintegration of the Soviet Union or the fall of the Berlin Wall without him. Mm-hmm. And yes, you could do it as a lower cost of historical voiceover thing, but it wasn't what we were trying to do with this film. Mm-hmm. But another example, actually, is something, again, we don't have the resources. Our budgets are there and thereabouts of zero when it comes to development. I know other companies that do invest heavily. Mm-hmm. And I'm also aware of putting the onus back on the filmmaker to go out and shoot these things, whether or not it's an EasyJet flight to Spain still costs money to go and film stuff, of course. But again, they're a reality. Mm-hmm. But we had an idea that was looking at a big art heist, and we wanted to make it a bit like a sort of film noir, sort of Crown Heights affair, Steve McQueen, you know, sort of 60s, 70s Steve McQueen, that kind of film, and get a sense of the locations in Italy and France and in various galleries around the world. So we literally borrowed sort of film more from the scripted market and found those sorts of moments. Now, again, we were setting the tone of a series, and that was because we were, again, aiming high at the platforms. And again, that didn't cost us anything, and it did look really, really slick. A technique we've been using also in our teasers is at the end, even a little couple of lines just to kind of verify just a little bit, that's just hammering on the head if it's slightly complicated. But to be honest, an idea shouldn't be that complicated. It should be like, boom, what is it in 30 seconds?
This is it. So let's say I'm a filmmaker, have a great idea, send you an email, you're intrigued, you invite me to pitch it, present maybe a teaser or something. What goes through your mind when once I did, or while I'm doing the presentation maybe? Is it like you immediately think, okay, where can I sell this? What needs to be changed?
Yeah,
what are the questions?
I think it's that bit of both. Creatively, obviously, you need to engage. And there are times where there's odd ones where you know you shouldn't, but you think it's such an amazing idea and this person has a great vision that you kind of try to ignore the harsh realities I'm talking about earlier. But you can't do that for many. Yeah. And I think from all of our points of view here, and one of the reasons why, you know, I know I like being here is also because we are transparent with producers or co-producers, but also with access. You know, when you're getting access, I think anyone that you're getting access to, and access is really an important side of filmmaking, is be upfront with people. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you need to develop a trust, but they're naturally going to be wary as much as a co-producer might be. And I think addressing that very early on is important. Have those questions. What does worry you? And I recognize as a filmmaker or potential co-producers, it's losing control. It's their baby being taken away where they don't want it to go.
It's hard.
It is. It's really hard. It's not perfect. Nowhere's perfect. But we do start from the position that we recognize it's your film. Mm-hmm. This is your project. You've worked on it. You've got the access. You've clearly spent some money already, probably, on this. So that will sustain throughout. But the caveat to that is, as I said before, whoever invests, whether or not it's an equity finance partner, which we haven't talked about, or a network or whatever, still will have the final editorial. Mm-hmm. So there has to be that idea that, yes, you have your vision, but it's going to evolve. There will be a journey, and there will be different reasons for that evolution. And then you start to have that conversation. It's like, A, what else has been done in this area? If you haven't done that, then we'll have to do it. That's fine, but it's knowing what else is out there, because another harsh reality is if any of the platforms or the channels have just done a series on Peru, whether, hold my hands up, it's pretty appalling, but you know, like they'll say, oh, Peru's been done. And it might have been completely different. But it's like, if Joanna Lumley's been traipsing around Peru, it's very hard to go to a British broadcaster, for example, with that.
I have a better idea.
Exactly. It doesn't work. But it's knowing what else is out there, knowing how secure the access is, knowing what journey you'd like to go on. Will act as a buffer between, you know, those sort of network conversations, but also having those realistic expectations of how can we get your film finished? Because I think that is the crucial component. And I talked to a producer who's an equity finance studio in LA a couple of weeks ago. And they have some serious finance underpinning that company. The woman there that I was talking to, the development team, they were also getting a lot of really high budgets coming in because people read the trade press, they're saying, and they see these huge sums that are being, you know, for the AOC doc. That is one or two a year. Mm. The reality is, yes, there's money, particularly coming out the States. Mm. So I say anybody that's got a US-leaning idea, then that is sensible to work on.
Equity funding, so you mean companies who manage money for millionaires or people who have money to invest in projects like films?
We should see them as production companies, because that's what they are. They're set up with a creative vision at their heart.
Right.
That said, yes, it might be someone from the tech world in San Francisco who's made a lot of money, and I mean a lot of money, mm-hmm. that wants to get into the content game and invest. They might be a sort of a silent backseat partner, or they might be very much involved. I'm seeing a lot of that also in the States of traditional studios like Blumhouse. Blumhouse had a lot of success with Horror and then Get Out and a few other films. They are working a lot more in the non-scripted, the documentary space. So they're looking to develop projects, series or singles, but they would be a partner and they will invest money into a project on the basis that they think that they will get a sale to a network and they will take the rest of the world rights. Again, I don't want to get too much into the embedded in the detail, but those equity finance partners, we're seeing beginning to see a few more of them here. It's early stages, and I think they will be obviously as important as the BBC and the others, the traditional networks, because they're a viable way of getting your film made. But again, their agenda is that they are also looking to make great content that gets them noticed, that gets a commission ultimately, because they still need to sell it to Showtime, Hulu, or Channel 4, whoever. So it is a selling game. It's really hard, I think, to kind of marry that up sometimes between subjects that you really believe in that should be on our screens. But I think it's a really hard question to ask. But if people say, I want to make a feature doc about a very, very tough subject, that's fine. We shouldn't shy away from that. But the reality is, if it's a feature doc, are we going to see people paying £15 in a cinema to watch your film? And of course, you know, beyond friends, family, relatives, uncles and aunts, you know,
I have many.
Yeah. Well, that's necessary. That's great. But I think that again is another thing to kind of to think about. So anyone investing in your film is looking at the checks and balances. They want a return. There are a few organisations that don't operate like that, and they're very few, and they're obviously where we are today, you know, the Bertha Foundation, you know, there's Chicken and Egg in the States.
Wicca,
absolutely. They're fantastic and are hugely supportive, and we think, you know, they're incredible what they're doing, and filmmakers should obviously really look at that, and we'd certainly work with filmmakers helping them apply for those, but that's been driven by whoever's doing it because we don't have the time. But those ones are few and far between, and they won't fully fund your project. Highly unlikely, you know. It's
but it might help to have your support. I assume on the application because it's very competitive.
Yeah, it does, and I think also that comes down to no degree of arrogance. That's just security. Will we deliver a film? Is this going to actually happen? And I think having companies like Spring Films, I think, you know, what Simon Chin's doing at Lightbox, they're really great. Altitude, you know, really good distributors. There are a few, you know, around that are really doing some great work, but you'll still be looking, we're still talking to the same people. You know, there is no magic solution to this. It's quite a long path, but it obviously can be rewarding.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Just getting us back on track onto the process of kind of how this works is fine. So you've got this film and idea that that Spring believe in. You've developed an amazing teaser.
Yeah.
You've got your budget down. What happens next? So you fire that teaser out to all of your contacts within the different networks that you normally deal with. And what's the next step after that?
So we work alongside ICM, our agents in the States. Having an agent is useful, certainly in America. ICM are one of the top three.
So you have a separate sales company that you deal with who help you sell this into all of
we do this together.
Right.
They're very much working with us and on our behalf, but they're boots on the ground as well for chasing up in meetings where I'm physically not able to be.
Do they go
in
and
LA
pitch that for you?
Yeah, or I'll do it myself. And then, so for example, as I said, I was in LA a couple of weeks ago. I'll be with them pitching things or going by myself. And then they will then follow up a month later, 2 or 3 weeks later, any thoughts on that. And they keep the wheels moving. Now, again, I'm aware that all filmmakers are not going to be able to get an agent tomorrow, of course. Mm-hmm. Somewhere down the track, they're useful for information because they can tell you what's happening, what's selling. They can help with deals, mm-hmm. But it's also helping get the foot in the door. It's another reason why Spring Films has that sort of leverage in the States, is that because we've got that kind of presence, cheerleaders effectively on our behalf. A side topic, I know, but again, the, you know, agents can be seen in very different ways, but actually they can be quite an asset to have. And these are these bigger ones. But that said, they've really engaged with a couple of those sort of more boutique-y ones, like the story that the China story that we've been working on, which has filmed over 17 years, a very difficult subject to get away. But I've had some lovely emails from them.
Working on it for 17 years.
Yeah, I know.
Have you been at the company that long?
I haven't. But this director have been shooting alongside somebody called Leah Mao, and it's their journey from male to female, back to male again.
Oh, and they brought that to you?
We've been working on it for a good couple of years, 2 or 3 years, but that pales into insignificance. But no, you're right. I need to get back on track, Paul. I'm taking all over the place. So yes, sizzle, the pitch, you've got the paragraph words. In the States, it's more of a presentation. In the UK, it's still more of a conversation. In the States, you have to be clearer what you're pitching, the ambition, the storylines.
So you have like a PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, and just being really clear on the narrative. It will be rigorously investigated and interrogated.
And what does the pitch include, a typical pitch?
Song, a dance.
Magic tricks.
Yes, exactly. look, I find meetings in the States really, really very positive. There feels, without being too rose-tinted, there feels to be a very sort of, how can we make this default at the beginning? And then you get disappointed. But it feels really like it's a real engagement. And yes, you are pitching. And yes, you know, there might be 2 or 3 execs that you're talking to. But it's pretty informal. It's because people want the same thing. And that's why I think the conversations tend to be across the board of trying to get something away. I know that's something you were sort of alluding to earlier, that, you know, there's that people are genuinely trying to be positive. They want to try and help. There's just other hurdles that kind of get in the way. And it's often money. It is often money. Mm. But the conversations there, say, tend to be informal. You need to know when you need to get out and not overstay your welcome. But once that pitch is in internal, this is the importance also of having really great materials, is they will be shared within the network or the platform. It's not an autonomous decision. It doesn't matter how high up you go. There will be other people are bought into that question, because for those, there's a lot of money at stake. Mm-hmm. So having that teaser that will be presented internally, again, will define your project, mm-hmm. Which again is why it's so important. They're pretty good about turning round, you know, sort of answers. Again, it's helpful having the agents banging on their door. You don't have to go to one place and then wait for that pass. You know, this has changed a lot in the industry in the last few years. Before, it was a bit not done that you were pitching it everywhere. Mm. Now that's accepted, and that it's accepted that maybe if the ideal scenario that two people are interested, then actually a degree of bidding occurs. This is not very often, but realistically, if you get someone to say yes that's engaged, I would have that conversation with the producer, say, look, we've pitched this to 30, 40 places. We've got a yes. A yes is gold. Mm. And if you get a green light, then can we make a way to do this that obviously isn't going to compromise your art or your, well, that some compromise will might well be needed. But actually, let's see if we can make this work. And because the reality is that getting a yes is difficult and to be celebrated.
Pitching to 30 or 40 different places. I'm just thinking as an independent, how do I even get a meeting with one? Is it a case of that I would need to team up with a bigger production company or with a sales agent who has a contact that I can just get a meeting?
Yes. I know it can be done without. And I know that there'll be loads of examples coming in saying, well, I didn't need them. I did it myself. And all power to them. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. If you team up with a production company, they're also putting the same filters it will go through to the networks as well. We don't have a magic wand say we're all emailing or talking to the same people. Mm-hmm. So there are no guarantees. It's just a bit more leverage, and it's also the confidence, the trust that you could deliver it. And that's nothing against the individual. It's just that the stakes are quite high. And if your project, you can't deliver it, it's not an easy thing to do. You need a bit of a support framework around you. Can't think of many, even obviously the big name directors that are just doing it by themselves. You know, there is a support, and that comes right the way through any company. This is partly the compromise. Mm-hmm. Ideas for me, it's being passionate and believing them, but knowing when to let go. And also thinking, not paranoid that I'll never have another great idea again. I see so many ideas, so many things where we're having to continually say no, 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 because they're not going to raise that money, in my opinion. I'm not always right, of course. But if you do reach a dead end with your idea, then I think there's a point at which you make a decision. Either I make this for myself, short form, and just kind of go through that process, or however you want to do it. Or you just go, fine, that's okay, let's find the next one. Mm-hmm. Don't worry if you don't have an idea. Don't worry if nothing's in your head at the moment. It will come, you're meeting somebody, because the ones that work are the ones that are extraordinary, the ones that really stand out. They do not come every 3 minutes. You have to find that moment or that meeting or that thing where you just go, yeah, this is going to go somewhere. If that's your ambition, if you really want to see it on the big, broad audience. Otherwise, absolutely, there are so many different fantastic platforms where you can put things up and you just are making content and you're bringing an audience, and they're equally valid. I'm talking from Spring Films or just the broader this market about trying to get things on the Netflix of this world. And of course, the second route does cross over, because you can get your film in a festival, and ultimately, if you've got that festival and it gets that buzz, mm-hmm. and you get that couple of bits of, you know, audience recognition and some really decent critical acclaim, then there is a good chance that a distribution will come knocking, and then there is a chance that could get sold through to some of these platforms. Absolutely. It's about getting it to that point, mm-hmm. and having belief in that vision. I support that, but it's tough, I understand.
Yeah.
Is that a more realistic route then for an independent filmmaker, is to maybe, if they don't want to partner up, that they create something and then they go down
but
the festival route?
But they need money for that. That's the problem,
yeah.
I think, if you want to make a high
film. And it's a lot of money.
Film. Yeah.
You know, if you're really doing, if you're delivering online costs, ballpark, but you're looking at about £30,000 in the online, grade, sound, you need, and the DCP, couple of grand there. These are real costs. I'm really conscious of when talking to filmmakers, it's like, do you have that money in your bank, or does your family or whoever have money in that bank to do that? Because be mindful that you could go down the road of 4 or 5 years into this process and you could be easily £100,000 down. That's terrifying. I certainly don't have that money. I don't want to be too, you know, down on it, but that's the reality. That's why I'm so support, you know, love short form stuff or telling stories in different ways that isn't just about making a feature doc that might feature in one festival and then doesn't go any further. It's like, how? And I meet so many filmmakers that are at those stages that are doing some really incredibly exciting things, visually fabulous. And I think that you can go off and do stuff. Yes, it comes down to money, but are there other ways of doing it? Is it being supported through funds or, you know, branded things or, you know, those other avenues?
Campaigns.
Kickstarter, find those other points and keep working them. As a filmmaker and a director, as I say, it doesn't just stop at being that or a producer. There's one element, and I'm crap at this, so I'm holding my hands up, but work social media, work in crowdfunding platforms. You have to, or someone in your team has to love doing it and want to do it, because if you can get that buzz on Insta or Twitter or whatever, that is important, because if you can get that self-publicity and that movement going on social media, that is as important as the bloody film itself. And I really believe in that. You have to do that. You have to work that. And if you've got into a festival, then you need to then go, right, we've made our film, and you think you've just crossed the finishing line, marvellous, look at my film. And you sit there smoking a big fat cigar going, look at our film. No, as a filmmaker, have that in the back of your heads, that is really where the work. And I think, you know, I looked in admiration. We worked with Joshua Oppenheimer on the act of Killing Look of Silence. Joshua is brilliant on social media, and he was doing that himself, and he worked it. And he worked it quite rightly because the films are incredible, and they are really incredible. Mm-hmm. But they got seen because he also worked social media.
As he was making the film? Or,
no, afterwards, when it was completed, when he started to get the screenings and the festival, he was all over it. Mm-hmm. And it was really, really impressive. Really, that's important. Spring doesn't have the bandwidth to do that, and most of the production companies you partner up with won't. As a filmmaker, that is your job. Another one that maybe no one wants to do, but really does bring results.
Unfortunately, though, I think even that costs money. To actually extend the reach of whatever content you create online, you have to put money behind advertising that to a new audience online. Otherwise, you're just talking to the people who like your Facebook page.
It can come from a simple thing of finding someone that's got a ton of followers and that they retweet your
Post
film.
Post my picture.
Yeah, influencers, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah.
And that is, you know, if they're reaching 200,000 and then somebody that they're hooked in with is reaching another 200,000 and then that crosses across the pond and then that starts to move around and then it's 2 million and then it's, that is getting your film out there.
So have a great story, know your audience, find an influencer. What other advice do you have for independent filmmakers? How do we get our films out there?
I think being flexible, certainly. Being positive, it's really, really hard. It's understanding that everyone's in that, everyone gets that. People want to work with someone that's just a good person. You're meeting somebody, you're meeting the project, but actually you're meeting someone you're going to spend a lot of time with. Mm. Is a long process. So those relationships throughout sustain, and you just don't know. I might still be naive, but the good people do win. And I'm maybe not seen politically at the moment, but just making those contacts, look, it's really fundamental. I don't want to tell people to suck eggs. Fundamental things, have a business card or a way of sharing a contact detail that you can actually then, you know, sort of engage somewhere down the line. People are fine with that. A couple of years ago, it's okay. You know, one email and you don't get reply, it's because you get hundreds of emails. It's not because they don't like you or they don't want to engage or they're rude. Follow-up emails, fine. A third email is okay, and the fourth, then you are annoying them. But and that isn't you personally. It's just because people are really stretched. Mm-hmm. So I think that ultimately it's finding the person that's going to engage and really believes in you and your project. And that isn't easy again, but it's great just making those connections, to say, being positive, being a good person, and that definitely folds through somewhere down the line. It's amazing how small the world is, and it's amazing how many crossovers you meet 10 years hence or in loads of different places people pop up. And I think that that's also a good thing because, as I said, if you're an arsehole, it doesn't work.
Someday it will come out. Yeah. Thank you, Figs, for these very motivational words, actually. Yeah. You don't have to be depressed anymore.
No.
Let's go out and make a film.
It does sound difficult to actually get to that end of the rainbow, but it is achievable. It sounds like if you can put the time and effort into packaging what it is you have in the right way.
Yeah.
And taking that to the right production companies and partners who could really get the film into either festivals or to the right commissioning bodies and distributors.
Yeah.
So it's possible, it's just you're going to have to think about how you package yourself.
It is, and I think just to round off, the idea of the industry stealing ideas, I haven't really come across. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of moments where we read stuff and we go, what? Mm-hmm. You know, but I think that's zeitgeisty, you know, things that are in the ether and we're all looking at the same stuff, and that's viral things is a reason we're all watching or reading the same things. So when you're approaching and when you're trying to get things made, accept that there might well be other things out there. You are selling yourself and also your unique perspective or selling point on a project. So that's what your USP is. That's what your value is. And whether or not you're teaming up with a production company or you're trying to raise finance yourself, people are looking for the USP. And it's being clear on the USP, then you're watertight and you've got something that's really, really special. And if you can deliver that with those, whoever your team of production partners is, that's what people really want to know.
So I've got the killer next big documentary film. How do I approach Spring Films and Figs Jackman?
Send it to Ed Dalal at... No.
No, I'm more than happy to be approached. My email's on the website anyway, but that's absolutely fine. If you don't hear from me, again, I underline, it's not because I don't like you. It's just because. And feel free to give me a nudge.
Up to 3 emails, guys, remember.
Well, I don't... Yeah. And it's hopefully is trying to be as positive as possible. But as I said, we don't have all the answers. The industry is hugely evolving, and I think evolving in a really positive way. That means we're not all reliant on the traditional ways. And so as filmmakers, I think there's a lot of exciting things that can be done. 5 years' time, we'll be having a very different conversation again, and I'll be asking you the questions. So it's like...
I'll be looking forward to that.
I can make a documentary about that. How the industry's evolving.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for your time today.
Pleasure.